What's up, everybody? This is Roman Gennaro, host of Empire Sports Talk. It's been a couple weeks since we've done this. Let's jump right in. First and foremost, I want to congratulate the Boston Celtics for winning their 18th NBA championship this week, breaking a tie with the Los Angeles Lakers with number 18 for the most in the history of the NBA. And no, the in-season tournament doesn't count towards that total. I've seen posts on social media this week, however sarcastic and satirical they may have been, that said, "Oh yeah, but the Lakers won the in season, so that counts." No, the in season doesn't count for anything except bragging rights, I guess, because you won this random thing that doesn't count for anything. Anyway, want to congratulate the Boston Celtics for winning their 18th championship. It was a foregone conclusion for most people. I know that a lot of people had Dallas winning the series, but at least for me, that was wishful thinking. Because as I said 2 weeks ago, Boston was deeper. Boston was more experienced in the playoffs because Tatum and Brown had been here, been to the finals before, and been late into the playoffs multiple times in the last few years. So this was seen as them finally breaking through and winning that championship. Jaylen Brown was named Finals MVP for having a pretty consistent performance. Played pretty well in most of those games, but from what I understand, I think the Finals MVP vote was 5-3 in favor of Brown. So Tatum very well could have won the award. I think he didn't because he had a bit of a slow start shooting wise. He did have a big game in the closeout game. I think you also could have given the award to Jrue Holiday, who seemed to come up big when Tatum and Brown weren't at their best, and I think was a huge reason why they were able to win this championship. The Celtics, I don't think, are going anywhere for a very long time. With free agency now open, I'm sure they're going to make some re-signings. They've already signed Jrue Holiday to a contract. If they bring back most of this team, I don't see why they won't be back there again next year. They pretty well breezed through the Eastern Conference half of the playoffs. You could say it was because, oh, Jimmy Butler was out and Donovan Mitchell was out and all this sort of stuff, but you got to win the games in front of you, and you got to do what you got to do, and Tyrese Haliburton wasn't fully healthy. And I do want to pause there and say that Indy just signed Pascal Siakam, or is officially going to when they are able to. I believe that's July 1st, to a big extension, a max contract. So he's staying in Indy, which I think is a huge reason why they were able to do what they were able to do, is by bringing him in this season. And I do think they're going to be a formidable opponent in the future as they get more experience in the playoffs and more of that behind them. Yes, the Celtics did sweep them, but that was a much, much closer series than it appeared. Speaking of closer series, this one was not. It was a gentleman's sweep that Dallas did manage to win game four by 38 points, but in the other four games, Boston's margin of victory was 12 and a half. So it was pretty convincing, other than basically, like, you could chalk game four up to a throwaway game. There was no part of me that thought that Dallas was going to be able to come back. Nobody besides Luka Doncic seemed to understand that they were in the NBA Finals, and there were some close games there in the middle. Games two and three were decided by 7 points apiece, and you could say that, oh, Luka cost him this because he was spending time complaining to the refs and all this sort of stuff, but he was down 2-0 at that point, 3-0 at that point, so he had a lot to complain about in his mind. I didn't think this was close. I never thought it was going to be close. I think Dallas is going to be back, provided they can get some reinforcements. I do think they need a third reliable scorer. They're apparently looking at Bronny James. I don't know if he's going to be a third scorer, if he's going to be capable of that. But any time there is Bronny James, there is the possibility that his father could come and join alongside. So you got to play with that. Other than that, there are some notable free agents out there. Most well known, Paul George. He has mostly been connected to the 76ers, which is a move that I like. If They want to get Joel Embiid that title to pair with Tyrese Maxey. I think he's a better third than James Harden. I think that would be a great fit for Philadelphia. I also think it would be really, really cool for New York. That's another team that I've heard for the services of Paul George. But until next season, we have a new champion. It is the Boston Celtics. Congratulations to one of the most historic franchises in all of sports on claiming another championship. This one's for you, Bill. The next thing I want to talk about is that, and it might seem fairly obvious or however you want to look at it, the Detroit Pistons have fired head coach Monty Williams after one season. And this is absolutely ludicrous to me because just a few years ago, Monty Williams took the Phoenix Suns to the NBA Finals, and a few years before that, he was quite the ally for Anthony Davis in New Orleans. But the reason that I think it's ridiculous is because, as I said, the Detroit Pistons, the worst team in basketball, fired a coach with experience, with NBA Finals experience, after one season. This isn't necessarily news for the worst franchise in basketball, and we're starting to pinpoint why they're the worst franchise in basketball. But in order to do that, I got to give you some numbers. Because I had to ask the question, what did you want Monty Williams to do? So when I went and looked back at the numbers, I had to go back to when it was still good. I went all the way back to the Detroit Pistons' last championship season, which was 2003-2004. That was the crew of Rip Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, Tayshaun Prince, Rasheed Wallace, Ben Wallace, those guys. So they won the finals in 03-04. They got back to the finals in 04, lost in 7 games to the San Antonio Spurs. Larry Brown left the team after that finals loss and turned the team over to Flip Saunders. Flip Saunders immediately got the Pistons back to the Eastern Conference Finals and then subsequently left after the 07-08 season. So this is where we start looking at the numbers. Since 2008, Detroit has 3 playoff appearances in 16 years. They have 8 head coaches. Monty Williams was the 8th head coach since 2008. None of those coaches lasted more than 4 years. And 3 of those coaches, Monty Williams, Dwayne Casey, and Stan Van Gundy, the last three, the most recent three, all have high level NBA Finals level experience. And I know you hear that, you say Dwayne Casey was never coached in the NBA Finals, but he was named Coach of the Year of the Toronto Raptors in 2018 and subsequently fired. And minus one Kawhi, Nick Nurse came in and took that same roster to an NBA championship. So you could say that Dwayne Casey deserves credit for that championship, but it is what it is because Nick Nurse is a great coach and they did have to go bring in Kawhi to make it happen. But Dwayne Casey is a high-level coach. And so, yes, you bring in these three high-level coaches and it doesn't work out and they get fired, but Dwayne Casey was the longest tenured of the last 8 coaches at 4 years. And there used to be a thing in college athletics, not so much anymore, which I don't necessarily agree with, but there used to be a thing in college athletics that if you're hired as a coach, as a head coach, you were pretty much guaranteed 4 years. You get a whole class to prove it. And obviously the NBA is not like that. The NBA is beholden to its stars. If its stars aren't happy, you're gone. LeBron James has been known as something of a coach killer. It's probably one of the reasons that Connecticut's Dan Hurley didn't want the Lakers job. More on that in a minute. But if you're hiring these coaches to coach a team that's at the bottom of the NBA, and you're not giving them time, you're not giving them more than 4 years. Van Gundy was there for 3. Monty Williams was there for 1. You're not giving him enough time. What do you expect him to do? As I said, Detroit has had 3 playoff appearances in 16 years. That's not Monty Williams' fault. They haven't won more than 23 games in a season since 2018. That's not Monty Williams' fault. And if you take a close look at Monty Williams' Pistons team, no, they weren't good. They won, what, 14 games? It was the worst record in the NBA. But if you look at their games, that team actually did play hard. I think it's not a head coaching issue. It is a front office issue. And obviously those are harder to solve because the GM's not going to fire himself. The owner's not going to fire himself. So it's not a coach issue. It's a front office issue because front offices make drafting decisions. And one of the big reasons why the Pistons suck is because for however long, I can't even remember, most teams will draft based on needs. The Pistons seem to draft on what toy is the shiniest. And obviously in the case of Cade Cunningham, he was obviously the best player in the country at the time, and I still think he's a really, really good player and he's the future of the team. But like you look at when they went and drafted Killian Hayes because they thought he was the next big thing, and he turned out to be a massive bust. And it seemed like they had this overflow of guards because they went and just drafted like the player they liked the best instead of the player they needed. Yes, they went and got. I think you keep Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, and Cade Cunningham, and scrap the rest. Because for the last several years, it seems like Detroit has had an overflow of guards, which you obviously can't play five guards in a lineup and win a game. What did they want Monty Williams to do? They can't attract free agent talent. I mentioned LeBron a minute ago, and that he's kind of something of a been known as a coach killer. Whereas like they bring in a coach to coach LeBron, Frank Vogel, Darwin Ham, and now J.J. Redick, more on him in a minute, but that's just the most recent three attempts to get a coach in the chair for the Lakers. And they just it seems like it's a revolving door. But thing there is like it's the Lakers. Like they have Anthony Davis, they have LeBron James, so they're able to win games despite a thin roster, win games despite a revolving door of coaches because they have those stars, because LA has the draw, even though it's been somewhat rough recently, it's still the Lakers. They still have that draw of being the Lakers. The Pistons haven't been like there was the bad boy Pistons in the 80s and 90s, and then there was the fundamental Pistons in the early 2000s. Those teams are long gone. There's no culture in Detroit right now. And if you keep firing these coaches within 2 or 3 years, you're not going to get one. Because it takes a coach or it takes a GM or an owner that knows what culture is to build it. Well, look what Pat Riley has done in Miami. He showed up, he coached them to a title in 06. He built a culture. And then he stayed on as the GM. And he's continued that culture. And he brought in Eric Spoelstra, and Eric Spoelstra stayed and has continued that Heat culture. And that's why we've seen the Heat consistently make the playoffs post LeBron Big Three, is because there was a culture in place from long tenured personnel that you can build off of. But when you're changing the guard every 2 or 3 years, that culture changes with it. This is not on Monty Williams. This is not on Dwayne Casey or Stan Van Gundy. If you'd given him a chance, maybe something could have happened. But I think ownership and the front office, and I do think they did just get a new GM, but it's a guy I've never heard of in my life, so who the heck knows? What did they want Monty Williams to do? He's not bringing KD with him or LeBron with him or Chris Paul with him to Detroit. You're not gonna go from 20 wins to 48 wins in one season with that roster. That's not Monty Williams' fault. That's what kind of bothers me. NBA coaches definitely get the worst rap when it comes to jobs because players and unrealistic expectations, which I think is the situation here. I think the Detroit front office is like, oh, we'll bring in Monty Williams, who's been to an NBA Finals, and we'll be fine. And then when the worst team in basketball with a terrible roster and who has made terrible drafting decisions outside of Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren, in the past decade. When they don't win 40 plus games, it's like, oh, we've made the wrong coaching decision. He's out. That's absolutely baloney. And until they're willing to recognize that, they're going to continue to be the basement of the NBA for years and years to come. Pretty sad for a franchise that used to be loud and proud. Staying with the NBA briefly, I want to talk about a pretty significant trade that happened this week. It didn't involve any huge name players, but I do think it was significant as the Oklahoma City Thunder traded Josh Giddey to the Bulls, a one-for-one swap, which is very rare in the NBA, for Alex Caruso. And this is a huge trade. I think Oklahoma City absolutely nailed this trade. They got rid of Josh Giddey, who could be a good player but could be pretty inconsistent, had been benched a couple of times during the season, and let's be honest, in the last 12 months has been something of a PR nightmare for Sam Presti and the Thunder. But they managed to have a really good run before falling in the Western Conference semis to the Dallas Mavericks. For most of the season, they were seen as one of, if not the best team in the Western Conference, one of the youngest teams in the NBA, and one of the best defensive teams in the NBA, with the exception of maybe Minnesota. But now they bring in Alex Caruso, who has had big game experience, who is a reliable shooter, who plays great defense, to a team with SGA and Chet Holmgren and Jalen Williams and all these players who are proving that this team is on the rise. And I've even heard, like, this makes them a finals favorite, which I think, for being Alex Caruso, is kind of a leap. But I do think he fills a need. He brings even more defense to an already good defensive team. He brings reliable scoring. I think this was a huge win for Oklahoma City. Cannot wait to see Alex Caruso plug into that team and see if they can make that NBA Finals that some are predicting. But huge win for Sam Presti and the Thunder there. The Los Angeles Lakers have hired J.J. Redick to be their next head coach. LA has been something of a coaching carousel since LeBron got there. LeBron's career has been something of a coaching carousel, with the exception of Mike Brown in Cleveland and Eric Spoelstra in Miami. LeBron, as I mentioned, does have that reputation of being something of a coach killer. The Lakers have had trouble building a culture, but unlike Detroit, they have LeBron, they have AD, and they have the ability to draw other players to them because of LeBron and AD. Detroit doesn't have anybody that can draw other players to the team. And so that's fine now. But LeBron James is going to be 40 soon, and he kept telling the Lakers, "Don't make your coaching decision based on me." He said, "Make your coaching decision based on Anthony Davis. He's the future of the franchise." Because I think everybody pretty much sees that LeBron's got maybe 2 years left, so he's not planning anything long term. That's why he said, "Make your plans around Anthony Davis and not me." And so they offered the job to two-time defending national champion Connecticut head coach Dan Hurley, because they were so impressed with his innovation on offense and these kind of things, and thought, oh, he could bring that to the Lakers. And I was as intrigued by that idea as anybody, but clearly that did not pan out, as Dan Hurley chose to stay at Connecticut and go for the first three-peat since John Wooden. But that really opened up the conversation of, wow, is the Lakers' job not appealing? And it's possible, because there's no culture, because there's no real direction there. And yes, they've made the play-in every year, but ever since the 2020 bubble championship year for the Lakers, things have been a mess in LA, and that's easily masked by the fact that they have made the play-in, that they won the in-season tournament. It's been easily masked about how bad things have been, because if LeBron and AD are healthy, they can mask a lot of things. But then if one or both of them are off the floor, you see how many holes that roster has, and you see the last couple of years, they thought they could bring in Russell Westbrook. They thought they could bring in all these players that they thought they could bring in Carmelo Anthony at the end. Then and it did not mesh at all, and it was a disaster. And they finally hit on something with Austin Reeves, but that roster is still really thin. And so it's been something of a mess. So maybe it's not desirable anymore. And if the LA Lakers job is no longer desirable, what chance does the D, do the Detroit Pistons have to lure another high profile coach after firing Stan Van Gundy, Dwayne Casey, and Monty Williams in consecutive tenures? Like those are your guys. There was one situation where when Detroit did fire Monty Williams, it was like, oh, well, maybe Monty Williams goes to the Lakers, and JJ Redick, who has no coaching experience to this point, cuts his teeth with Detroit. And that would be intriguing because JJ Redick, although I don't love this hire because of the no experience and it because it's a high profile job and because it's the Lakers. I mean, we've seen our former players have really good experience out of the gate as a head coach, see Jason Kidd. But we've also seen former players go get into coaching, get that high profile player job, have the players be a problem, and it basically torpedoes the career. See Steve Nash in Brooklyn with that disastrous big three. So I think JJ is one of the more is one of the most brilliant basketball minds out there right now. LeBron has a relationship with JJ, likes JJ, co-hosts a podcast with JJ. That seems like a conflict of interest at this point, now that they're head coach and player. But he has no experience. It's LA. It's in the area. It's in a time of 24/7 sports coverage. I think JJ could be a great head coach. I don't think that the Lakers job is the job for him, and you know, again, with the carousel that it's been, maybe he's the only one that would take it. But that's precisely why he shouldn't have taken it. Because until LeBron is out of there, and I'm not saying it's 100% on LeBron, but until LeBron is out of there, there's no hope for crafting a consistent culture. Even if JJ's the right guy, he comes in, then LeBron's out of there in 2 years. And then it's Anthony Davis. Well, how do we do this with Anthony Davis as the centerpiece? Well, then he could move on or retire. So it's going to be hard to build a culture as long as LeBron James is there, because as long as LeBron James is there, the culture is LeBron James. So I don't love the hire because he's no experience. He's younger than LeBron, and LeBron can say he had no say in the head coaching search. But we saw how vocal he was about really liking Dan Hurley, and then that went away. And then it came down to two options. Well, oh, if Anthony Davis is the future, Anthony Davis has a history with Monty Williams and loves Monty Williams. And nobody in the league has a bad word to say about Monty Williams. So if it's a move of Anthony Davis is the future of hiring for Anthony Davis's team, we should get Monty Williams. But oh no, LeBron James likes JJ Redick. LeBron James has a relationship with JJ Redick. Who do they hire? JJ Redick. So it's hard for me to believe that LeBron did not have a hand in the coaching search, even if he says he didn't, because there's many, many pieces of evidence that LeBron just likes to say things. So I do think this was a LeBron hire for sure, and I don't see this. I don't see JJ's tenure in LA being any longer than any other coaches in recent years. I honestly don't. Moving on to the Stanley Cup Finals, we have a game seven, and this is so exciting. Florida Panthers and Edmonton Oilers are going to a game seven in the Stanley Cup Finals after Florida had a 3-0 lead. I do believe Edmonton would be the first team ever to come back from a 3-0 deficit and win the Stanley Cup Finals if they're able to do it on Monday. And I honestly believe they will. I said after game 5. When they closed it to 3-2, I said the series is over and it's going to Edmonton. Like the way that Edmonton has played in the last 3 games, Florida looks lost. And just in the last 3 games, Edmonton has outscored Florida 18-5 in games 4, 5, and 6. Connor McDavid, the best player in the world, has had 4 points in each of games 4 and 5. He had 1 goal and 3 assists in game 4, 2 goals and 2 assists in game 5, playing out of his mind. And it's like, oh, well, Connor McDavid's going to have an off night and they're not going to be able to win. Okay. Connor McDavid didn't register a point in game 6, and yet Edmonton still won game 6, 5-1. So all signs point to Edmonton closing it out and making history at this point, because if you're Florida and you blow a 3-0 lead and then have to go home and face a game 7 when you had it in the bag, I that against the best player in the world, that's a tall task. I think this is 100% going in Edmonton's favor because they have just dominated since game 4. It's a tale of two series. They have dominated since game 4, and Florida has not been the same team that they were in the first 3 games. So this 100% to me seems like setting up for an Edmonton Oilers historic comeback. I look forward to that. Game 7 is the best word two words in sports, and we have one in a sport that I've said in the past, admittedly, I am a casual, but I love hockey, and we have game 7. Last couple things here. The MLB on Thursday played a game at Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama, to celebrate the Negro Leagues. As we heard in the past couple weeks, the Negro League records have been added to the Major League records, so it all times up wonderfully. And it also ended up being a tribute to Willie Mays, who was supposed to be in attendance at that game, along with a lot of the original members of the Negro League players that were there. But unfortunately, Willie Mays passed away earlier in the week and was not able to attend. There was a nice message from his son Michael alongside Barry Bonds and Ken Griffey Jr., two of my favorite players growing up, where Michael Mays said, "My father said that he would do anything to find a way to be here, and he did. Make a lot of noise, he can hear you." And it was just this uproarious applause, and it was this great game at the beautiful historic Rickwood Field in Birmingham. It was the first Major League Baseball regular season game played in the state of Alabama, which is special for me and my family, because we are from Alabama. You see the Kenny the Snake Stabler jersey on the wall back there. He played at the University of Alabama and is related to me through marriage. I have a Bryce Young bobblehead here on the desk. My mom is from Dothan. My parents met at Troy in Troy, Alabama, and so it was very special for me to be able to witness the first MLB game in the state of Alabama. It was the St. Louis Cardinals against the San Francisco Giants. The Cardinals won 6-5. Both teams were wearing special jerseys highlighting the Negro League's history in each of those cities. And the cool thing was that Brendan Donovan was the star of the night for the St. Louis Cardinals. He's an Enterprise, Alabama native, which, as I mentioned, my mom being from Dothan, Enterprise is about 30 minutes away from Dothan. I've been to Enterprise many, many times myself, and it's a special place. The Enterprise, Alabama native Brendan Donovan went 3-for-3 with a homer and 3 RBIs in the Cardinals' victory, and it was a really special game to watch. I wish I could have been able to have been there, but I had to settle for watching it on TV, and it was excellent. I love these special games that the MLB is doing every year, first with the Field of Dreams games a couple of years in a row, and now this. And I look forward to seeing what they do in the future, but I, for one, would love to see them go back to Rickwood Field, as well as Dyersville, Iowa, and redo the Field of Dreams. The last thing that I want to mention, I want to stay with what I said at the beginning of the Rookwood segment a little bit longer. The professional sports world lost two giants this week, and I do mean giants. One literally, but both figuratively. Jerry West and Willie Mays. Jerry West was the logo, and he was the logo. A lot of people have said that like it's Jerry West mixed with Michael Jordan because of the shape of the player, but it was 100% Jerry West. If you've ever tried to make a logo like that, pretty much everybody comes out looking bald unless you have a wild hairdo. So it's Jerry West. He was the logo. I think it's the only, because Major League Baseball has a logo man, but I don't think they've ever come out and said, oh, it's this player. The NBA has straight up been like, oh, it's Jerry West. It's based on this picture. Like, we're proudly telling you it's Jerry West. And Jerry West was something special. That's putting it mildly. He not only was an incredible player, but a 14-time All-Star, an NBA champion in 1972. He's got his number retired by the Lakers. He's got his number retired by the West Virginia Mountaineers, where he played college. All these stats, 10-time NBA first team, the 1972 NBA All-Star MVP, 14-time All-Star, as I mentioned, all these things. But then he became an executive and became one of the winningest executives the league's ever had. He was an 8-time champion as an executive, 2-time executive of the year in 95 and again in 04. He averaged 27 points a game, 5.8 rebounds, and 6.7 assists. It wasn't just, oh, he was playing against nobody. Yes, the league was different in the 60s and 70s, but Jerry West went up against the guys that he went up against, which is the only thing you can do, and he set himself apart. And he was the logo for a reason. Everybody respected Jerry. When the sport loses somebody that's a giant like that, it reminds me of when we lost Kobe and then Bill Russell. Obviously, the Kobe situation was different because his was unexpected and he was so young, but when a sport you love loses a giant, just something feels different after. And then also Willie Mays in Major League Baseball. Anybody who's listened to this podcast for even 3 minutes knows how much I love the game of baseball. And you cannot have a conversation about baseball without talking about Willie Mays, who's arguably the best to ever do it. It's hard, we talk all the time in basketball about who the greatest of all time is. And that's because really that's the only sport you can do it in besides hockey, because in hockey it's pretty obvious. But that's really basketball is really the only sport you can do it in, because in football and baseball respectively, there's so many different positions and like there's two sides of the ball, so it's hard to you can't take Willie Mays and Nolan Ryan and say which of these guys was better. They did two completely different things. You can't take Tom Brady and Jerry Rice and say which of these guys was better, because there's nothing comparable. But arguably Willie Mays was the best to ever do it. Defensively, he was a true five-tool player. He was a 24-time All-Star. He was a 2-time MVP. He was the 1951 Rookie of the Year. He was a 12-time Gold Glove Award winner, and this was right when they invented the Gold Glove as an award. He won it right away. He was the 4-time home run leader. He's sixth all time in home runs. Just there, you can't run out of words to say about Willie. But at some point you're like, what else is there? Because all of the numbers and all of the stories and all of the things point to Willie. And Willie Mays was the godfather of Barry Bonds, because Willie Mays had a close relationship with Barry's father, Bobby. And when Bobby played for San Francisco, he wore 25, because when Bobby first showed up, Willie was still there wearing 24. And then when Willie retired, 24 was also retired. But when Barry Bonds came into the league with Pittsburgh, He wore 24 in Pittsburgh because he wanted to be like his godfather, Willie Mays. And there's a Willie Mays documentary where it's a story that Barry and Willie are telling. And Barry told Willie, he said, "I want to wear 24 because I want to be like you." And Willie told him, "I want you to wear 25 because I want you to be better than me." So when Barry joined the Giants and 24 wasn't available, Barry honored Willie's wish and wore 25. And now that number is synonymous with the San Francisco Giants, with the Barry Bonds, and with the current home run leader, regardless of where you stand on if he should be or not. Barry Bonds and that number 25 is synonymous with the lead in home runs at 762. So I could go on for another 10 minutes about Willie Mays, but I won't. But I will say that, and I don't have the images with me. I'll put up the images that inspire what I'm about to say, and then maybe I'll figure it out later. If there's anybody that listens to this podcast that's really good with Photoshop, maybe help me out, because I've heard arguments in the last few days, and we just talked about Jerry West being the NBA logo, and that the MLB hasn't explicitly come out and said, "I don't think, oh, it's this person." If I had to guess, I'd say maybe Jackie Robinson, but it's kind of, the design is kind of very specific to a point where the hitter at the plate could be either a right-handed or a left-handed batter. So it's probably just a generic design in order to pull off that optical illusion. But if we wanted to redo the logo, I would be all in favor of making the logo Willie Mays. And I have two images in mind, and I'll put them up on the screen as I talk about them. And I am not good at Photoshop. If you've seen some of the designs that we've put out on our social media channels, I do my best, but they are pretty basic. I'm not a Photoshop guy. I'm gonna give the logos a shot. I've been watching Photoshop tutorials on how to do this specific thing. So maybe I can pull it off. But if you're a Photoshop, if you're good with Photoshop, help me out and maybe take a shot at it and send me some designs. The first design is the obvious one, and it is the iconic catch in the, I believe it was the 1954 World Series. Willie Mays back to the plate, about 400, probably 440, because stadiums back then were so much bigger. And he makes that iconic over the shoulder catch and absolutely hurls it back into the infield. People have said that the throw is more impressive than the catch, and I would agree with that. That throw is insane. But it's one of the most iconic images in all of baseball. And so that's the obvious choice for the logo. And the second one, at least for me, is this really great shot when he's hitting. And this is personally my favorite, and I think this would make a great logo. There's no great story about this one like there is the catch, but I think this would be a great logo, and this would be my pick for an updated version of the MLB logo man, who as of now I believe is not attached to anyone but would love to be attached to Willie Mays. So if you have a if you're a Photoshop expert out there, help me out. I'm gonna give it a shot after I finish recording this podcast, but I'm not holding my breath. It's not my forte. I'm good at talking. And so that's why I'm here doing the podcast and not, I have to do all the social media because it's a one-man operation. Support the one-man operation who's desperately trying to live out a dream. We've gotten a big jump in our subscribers this week. Thank you so much for that. I'm working so hard to continue to bring you new stuff. We have our 100th episode coming up. So thank you all for continuing to listen. But tell your friends about it, and I'm just a guy, I've been doing this for 10 years on and off, trying to chase a dream. But Photoshop is not one of my gifts. If you are gifted in a way that I am not, take a shot at those two Willie Mays logos and I'll post them and I'll give you credit. That's all I have for you on this episode of Empire Sports Talk. Subscribe to on our YouTube channel, as I just mentioned. We're growing and we're trying so hard to get you new stuff, but we need that subscribership. We need that viewership. Tell your friends. As I said, our 100th episode is coming and we have some things planned, but we would love an audience for that one. So please go like and subscribe for new content. And this has been Roman Gennaro for Empire Sports Talk. It's a good day to go 1-0. I'll see you on the next one.